This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Heidi Adams-Fitzpatrick in Washington, coming up on Africa News Tonight.
If nothing is done, some 20 million people could starve to death in the next 6 months in those four countries.
That's FAO Director General José Graziano da Silva warning about the worsening humanitarian crisis in South Sudan, Somalia, northeast Nigeria and Yemen. Details coming up. Also, multiple suicide bombings rock northeast Nigeria as Boko Haram continues its terror campaign in the region, and bodies of 16 migrants pulled from the Aegean Sea in another Mediterranean boat tragedy. We'll have these stories and more for you, so stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. And we begin with news from Rome, where there was another dire warning today about the humanitarian crises in South Sudan, Somalia, northeast Nigeria and Yemen. UN Food and Agriculture Organization Director General José Graziano da Silva issued the warning at the agency's council meeting.
Unfortunately, famine is back in Africa. It has already struck South Sudan and other countries in Africa, like Somalia and northern Nigeria, are on the brink of starvation. The same occurs in Yemen, in the Near East region. If nothing is done, some 20 million people could starve to death in the next 6 months in those four countries.
He warns famine can have widespread consequences.
Let's remember that famine does not just kill people. It contributes to social instability and also perpetuates a cycle of poverty and aid dependence that endures for decades.
Now, so far, famine has been officially declared in two counties of Unity State in South Sudan. The FAO chief briefed the council on his recent trip to the Lake Chad Basin.
Poor family farmers and rural communities are hopeless in this region where Boko Haram emerged. These people were already struggling against the impacts of climate change, related drought, and the lack of public investments and opportunities, especially for the youth. And then their lives and livelihoods have been devastated by the conflicts of armed groups. If we do not support these people, they will have no option other than join local militias or movements of distress migration.
He says the FAO and its partners will provide assistance to more than 1.2 million people in the Lake Chad Basin in the coming months. This includes distributing seeds, animal feed and vaccinations, as well as restocking livestock. Similar programs are underway in the other crisis areas.
We have to tackle climate change, manage natural resources in a sustainable way, and build resilience of poor family farmers and rural communities in the face of conflicts and protracted crisis.
And that's Food and Agriculture Organization Director General José Graziano da Silva. He was speaking in Rome today to the 49-member FAO Council, which oversees budgetary and program issues. Meanwhile, the humanitarian situation in Somalia continues to deteriorate and the risk of famine persists. That's the latest assessment from UN officials, who say 6.2 million people are now in need of assistance in Somalia. Since last November, nearly 600,000 people have been displaced by drought. About 127,000 of those have gone to Baidoa, where the humanitarian situation is described as serious. Officials say acute malnutrition is increasing in most most parts of the country, raising the likelihood of more disease outbreaks. Also, well over 28,000 cases of cholera and acute watery diarrhea have been reported, with about 560 deaths. Meanwhile, there is a strong possibility that the El Niño weather event will return by the end of the year and affect the October to December rainy season. El Niño is often associated with a lack of rain in Somalia. Well, northeast Nigeria also saw two more suicide bomb attacks today near the Borno state capital of Maiduguri. AFP quotes security officials as saying three women bombers were stopped by vigilantes around 5 a.m. as they tried to sneak into the village of Mamanti. That's about 15 kilometers east of Maiduguri. Two of the bombers blew themselves up. A third was shot dead. One vigilante was reportedly killed and another injured. A second attack was reported in Minari, 10 kilometers west of Maiduguri, about 3 hours later. A man blew himself up as vigilantes approached, killing three of them and wounding two others. Boko Haram militants often use young people, especially teenage girls, to carry out attacks against civilians. Since 2009, the insurgency has claimed more than 20,000 lives and displaced more than 2.5 people. Well, thousands of West Africans leave home each year to make the dangerous trek across the Sahara and the Mediterranean. Their destination? Europe. Their own countries have high levels of unemployment, and life in the European Union offers a chance of a better future for themselves and their families. Nigerian reporter Isaac Abruk recently returned from Benin City in Edo State, where a large number of people are leaving. VOA's William Eagle asked him what motivates people to leave a state which has a lucrative oil industry.
It is an unfortunate situation. Benin is the capital of Edo State. And Edo State is from the south-south region of Nigeria, or you can say the Niger Delta, which produces oil. So Edo State is part of the state that receives higher remunerations from the oil proceeds from the federal government. But my visit to Benin City, and also I visited the villages such as Ekeadolo and Uromi, you would notice that there is most of these monies have unfortunately not been put in proper use. Where do I say this? The roads in Benin City and the villages are very poor. The health care is also poor. Pipe-borne water, potable water. And I would begin to ask people, why are people leaving?
We met parents who have sell off their farmland just to sponsor these kids just to go to Europe. It takes about over $1,200 to get from Benin to get yourself to Italy. So it is more promising when you can struggle and send your kid, your son or your daughter, to go overseas, to go to Europe. And when their sons and daughters get there, they're involved in menial jobs. Some get so successful. In fact, in these villages, most of the good buildings you could see there and people having a good lifestyle are people who have relatives living in Europe, who have gone through this very route, who have gone through the Sahara Desert and over the sea from Libya to Italy. That these are the people that their parents and their relations are doing well.
What is their route from Benin City to the European Union?
As I'm talking to you, every Thursday, at least two buses, 18-seater buses, leave Benin for either Sokoto or Kano. From there, they go to Agadez in the Niger Republic, and from there, they journey to Libya. I'm told it takes just 3 weeks from Benin City to Italy.
Are they taken by bus the whole way to Agadez or from there to Libya?
I spoke with the smugglers who are the travel agents. They are either called smugglers or they are called trolleys. They told me what happens is that they take a bus from Benin to Kano or to Sokoto State, northern Nigeria. From there, they get to Agadez. In Agadez, either you take a truck. If you don't have money, you take a truck, and this truck will load about 200 people in these trucks, or if they have a little bit buoyant, you have money, you take a pickup. The pickups normally take like, say, 50 people, and then they move. They travel all by vehicles to Libya.
And from Libya, they would take one of the dinghies or one of the quite risky overfilled boats to Italy?
Yes. In fact, if you talk to the travel agents, they will tell you that those who have died on the sea are people that don't have money. They explained to me that if you have money, when you get to Libya, you will get into a boat that is stronger, that has the engine of the boat, that has the capacity to take you guys from the coast of Libya to Italy safely. But what happens when people capsize is that most of these people don't have enough money, so they have to overload. When they get to Libya, these people will collect monies from the passengers and buy an engine that will propel the boats, because they know that for every boat that is used to ship these immigrants, it is very likely that it is going to be captured by the securities in Italy. So there is no hope of having it back. So they have to collect the money from these passengers, buy this boat, then they use the boat to travel. If the boat is impounded, is seized by the police, so be it.
Has there been a reaction from the government of Edo State or the national government to help curtail this problem?
Yes, the federal government have agencies. The Edo State government too have agencies. These agencies are all working hard to ensure that these people don't continue to migrate. But the truth is that it has very, very minimal effect. I know that the Edo State government, they are involved with a certain NGO called Youth Initiative on Immigration, Migration, and Integration of Youths. I know that a government, they've made provisions for vocational training centers. I met a girl whom also was an immigrant. She traveled and was a prostitute and all of that. She was victimized. She was kept by her handlers and she suffered a lot. So when she came back, I know that they gave her a sewing machine and she went back. She's a fashion designer now. You know, but that is like a drop in the sea. And funny enough, we are also being told that government officials who are elected into political positions, when they are there, they come back to the people and say, okay, you have elected me. I want to reward you for electing me as dividend of democracy. Okay, if you can get your children out, I would sponsor them to Europe as a way of paying you back for electing me into office. These are some of the things that we discovered there.
And that was reporter Isaac Abrak in Abuja, Nigeria, speaking there to VOA's William Eagle. Well, most migrants and refugees trying to get to Europe are smuggled on the central Mediterranean sea route to Italy. But smaller numbers are still trying to get to Greece from Turkey. Today, another migrant boat sinking left 16 people dead. Greek authorities say they found the bodies of 9 migrants in the eastern Aegean Sea near the island of Lesbos. 7 other bodies were recovered from Turkish waters. 2 women, one of them pregnant, were reportedly rescued. The Coast Guard says the pregnant woman told authorities she'd been among 25 people who had set sail late Sunday night from the Turkish coast. They were headed for Lesbos on a smuggling boat. The route from Turkey to Greece used to be the main route for migrants and refugees, especially Syrians. But an agreement about a year ago between the EU and Turkey slowed the flow and aims to deport those who do arrive. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Heidi Adams Fitzpatrick in Washington. At 18 past the hour, let's take a look at our top stories. The Food and Agriculture Organization issues another dire warning about the humanitarian crises unfolding in South Sudan, Somalia, northeast Nigeria, and Yemen. Multiple suicide bombings rock northeast Nigeria as Boko Haram continues its terror campaign in the region. And the bodies of 16 migrants are pulled from the Aegean Sea in another Mediterranean boat tragedy. For more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Moving to southern Africa now, where a group of Zimbabwe's major opposition parties is working to bring about electoral reforms before the country's next elections in 2018. Our reporter Kudzai Zinavashi takes a closer look at the coalition's push for change.
The group known as the National Electoral Reforms Agenda, or NERA, wants reforms that will level the playing field in the coming polls. Joelson Mugari is the chairman of the organizing committee.
The mandate of NERA is strictly to work on electoral reforms, to push for the alignment of electoral laws to the new constitution of Zimbabwe, the one we adopted in 2013.
NERA says to ensure honest elections, it will police Zimbabwe Electoral Commission, or ZEC. He said NERA had also...
That we have achieved as well is to monitor and observe all these processes of ZEC mandate. Currently, we observed the tendering system. That is, we were involved in opening of the tender box. We were very happy that the process was transparent.
In the past, the Electoral Commission has often been accused of colluding with the ruling ZANU-PF's plan to rig elections. Mugari says the adoption of the biometric voter registration system, otherwise known as BVR, will solve a lot of irregularities.
NERA is the one that actually forced ZEC into the BVR system. Why we wanted BVR? Because we know that BVR is going to eliminate a duplication of voters. It will actually clean the voters' roll. Because as we speak, if I can give a very good example of my father, who has passed on in 1998, he's still there in the voters' roll. BVR is whereby a person presents himself at a polling station, get a photo taken, have your fingerprint used, and produce your identification card with you. The three things that are required need the presence of a human being, not those that are dead.
In previous elections, opposition parties have cried foul, citing that the ruling party was using names of people that passed on to add on to their votes. NERA says in the coming month, they are going to step up their operations.
There is now a program coming up. Currently, we have resolved that as NERA, we want to minimize demonstrations and concentrate on advocates. So from the 6th of May, on a weekly basis, every Saturday, we are going to be having some advocates rallies. We are starting with Chitungwiza, then we go to Bindura, we go to Marondera, we go to Mashingo, we go to Midlands, Blawayo, all the provinces.
Critics say opposition unity is important not only for monitoring the Electoral Commission, but for campaigning and potentially agreeing on a common candidate to face President Robert Mugabe. The leader main opposition, Morgan Tsvangirai, has been moving towards the Grand Coalition by signing memorandum of agreements with other opposition parties. Mugari says the Grand Coalition is coming into realization because of the work NERA has done.
The bottom line is what has been agreed was that there's going to be bilateral agreements between political parties. A number of political parties, almost all of the political parties in NERA, had a chance to talk to each other. And those within NERA, they've seen those that they can work with. And currently MDCT has decided that it wants to call those that they think they're able to work with. It is not only these two that are going to be called. It's a process. I'm sure tomorrow they are meeting another political party and do the signing, and then they meet another one and do the signing. I'm very confident that there will be about 5 or 6 political parties that will form the alliance.
Mugari says it is a long way to go, but with the support of war veterans critical of the Mugabe government, they are certain they will make a mark. He estimates that by 2018, NERA should have achieved at least 85% of their demands, which include the right to educate the public on voting rights. They also want the government media to provide them a fair amount of airtime during the electoral campaign. This is Kudzai Zinawashe reporting for Voice of America from Harare.
Elsewhere on the continent, representatives from Algeria and Russia met in Algiers recently to discuss security and counterterrorism. The meetings focused on the conflicts in Libya, Syria, and Western Sahara. Also under the spotlight, cyber terrorism and cyber crime. The two sides said they have serious concerns about the threat of foreign terrorism to international peace and security. Mark Katz is a professor of government and politics at George Mason University near Washington, D.C. He spoke with VOA's Mohammed El-Shanawi about the significance of the talks.
Well, I think it's not surprising. I think that in many respects, Algeria is the model Arab government for Putin. It's a tough secular regime that opposes Islamists, and it's more or less accepted by the West. And so I think that, you know, for Putin, it's like, you know, Bashar al-Assad should be seen in the same light in particular. And so I think that, you know, Russia, Algeria, they see eye to eye on several different things.
On Libya, the Russian delegation welcomed Algeria's effort to reach a political solution negotiated by Libyans themselves without foreign intervention. Does that contradict Russia's backing of General Haftar, Libyan National Army commander, who refused to negotiate with the UN-backed government of National Accord?
Well, it does contradict. I think basically the Russian position is that Algeria is free to try to negotiate a solution, but General Haftar is free to not participate. So you see, everyone's free. Therefore, Russia is not going to, you know, claim to pressure anyone, but obviously Russian support, as well as that from others, enable General Haftar to not negotiate.
But another contradiction is that Russia is supporting the UN-backed government of National Accord.
This is actually very typical of actually Putin's behavior in particular, that he tends to give some support to two sides in a conflict in several places. And I think that this is what he's doing here. That way, you know, whichever side wins, then he wins too. But obviously no one's going to win right away, and this way, each side has a reason, you know, to seek good relations with Moscow. They can't afford bad relations. So I think it's not a policy that actually is focusing on the settlement. It's focusing on what Russia can get now from either side.
The two delegations expressed their serious concern about the threat of foreign terrorists on international peace and security. What can the two countries contribute to the fight against terrorism?
Well, I think that this is something that they are both serious about. And I guess the one thing that they can do is to, you know, share intelligence with each other about various terrorists and perhaps some kind of, you know, cooperation with each other. So I think it might not be very much, but I think that both sides are serious about this.
And that was Professor Mark Katz of George Mason University near Washington, D.C., speaking there to VOA's Mohammed El-Shanawi. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Haley Adams-Fitzpatrick in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, do visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned for the sunny side of sports that's coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Werkinger, and our engineer, Rashad Smith, thank you for choosing The Voice of America.
Africa, this is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
Greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's